Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Wrestle Chat Radio's Fast Lane Review. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing the events of last night's WWE Fast Lane at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, you can always log into our chat room. And we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, Fastlane turned out to be a very interesting pay-per-view, didn't it? For very much the reasons that we had speculated on yesterday during our pre-show. And that is, we had all said these matches on paper look very good. Nothing wrong with the matchups. What's wrong is the anticipation of who's going to win and who's going to lose being taken away, not just because it's predictable, but because there was no anticipation or no reason to really root for one above the other. And that came to fruition, folks. I'm here to tell you that I'm usually very hard on wrestling. Sometimes people say too hard. I get a lot of letters who say, wow, you're very critical, extraordinarily critical. But I don't have a problem with last night's pay-per-view, wrestling-wise. As a matter of fact, I was pleasantly surprised. But the whole pay-per-view, I kept thinking to myself, how much better would this be if I were emotionally invested in who's going to win and lose? How much more would I be enjoying this right now if I really had a vested interest in who I wanted to win or lose? And the answer is a whole lot more. A whole lot more. So we're going to delve into this in just a moment. But before we do, there's a couple of short news items we want to bring up. First off, there's been a little bit of a rumor going around about this John Bravo guy who I'm starting to get sick of talking about because, quite frankly, between you and me, I think he's full of crap. He's starting to impress me as a guy who's full of crap. But apparently, someone on that list was a former WWE wrestler by the name of Luther Reigns, if you remember Luther Reigns. So when some of these things said Reigns, he says, no, it's two separate people. I still got the goods on Roman Reigns. It's two separate people. I knew about Luther Reigns. I didn't confuse him. Okay, well, are you making Gone with the Wind? Because your films are 15 minutes, and it's been 2 weeks. So I don't know what the hell he has, if he has anything. Getting sick of talking about him. I'm beginning to believe he's full of crap. Anyway, the second item that's not full of crap is Jeff Hardy was arrested in North Carolina on charges of DUI, I guess, actually. And this does not bode well for Jeff Hardy. Now, there are a lot of people saying, well, wait a minute. One of the Usos got busted for drunk driving. Nothing really happened to him. Yeah, but there's a different situation. Jeff Hardy's had a huge, long history of drug rehab and substance abuse, and they don't want anything like this coming up in Jeff Hardy's world, because they fear that if something like this happens, it means he's a heartbeat away from a relapse and can't be trusted. And I'm here to tell you that's not good news. Jeff Hardy never went into a rehab center in his life. He never really had a substance abuse problem. He never had to be suspended. He never had that horrible situation where he had to fight Sting and was clearly out of his mind on something. Then you say, okay, the guy makes a mistake. He's had a couple and he gets a DUI. But that's not the case. Jeff Hardy is on thin ice to begin with anywhere he works, thin ice, because of his past. And when something like this occurs, they have to worry about it. I don't know how far this will go. I don't know whether this will hurt any plans. I don't know whether the WWE will insist on, you know, taking some kind of action. I don't know. But I do know it's sad. It's sad because this is a guy who's not going to be wrestling forever. He's 40, going on 41. And, you know, what are you going to do? You wrestle till your, you know, mid-40s, 45, you know, that's about it. So it's sad. Anyway, let's talk about Fastlane, and we will start with the pre-show match, which is kind of funny because I'd said you may as well just have Ty Dillinger fight Mojo Rawley, and hey, somebody was listening. Except they added the Fashion Police, and they added Gable and Benjamin. You know, it's an okay match. It is what it is. They're using the Fashion Police basically as, you know, a joke. Dillinger, they're not. Dillinger, they're trying to build, I guess. I thought Mojo was going to be the guy they were going to build. But it doesn't look like Mojo as a heel is going to be any more relevant than Mojo as a face. It was an okay match. Nothing really to brag about. I don't think it really got the Fashion Police over. They didn't do anything to speak of. But maybe it did something for Dillinger, Mike. What'd you think?
Yeah, it maybe did something for Dillinger. And look, I can foresee them splitting up the Fashion Police and sending him over to 205 Live, you know, because that's about what he weighs.
Tyler Breeze.
Tyler Breeze. That's about what he weighs, you know, about 205, 204 pounds, whatever it is, by himself. So I can foresee them sending him over to 205 Live. And they're about going as far as they can with this, the Fashion Police, and they've ruined it, but yeah.
Yeah, they've kind of, that ship has sailed, I think, you know. It's almost the same with the Ascension. The ship has sailed on them. They're not taking them seriously. They're just kind of, they're entertainers of the WWE at this stage, Sabretooth.
Yeah, and it's a shame, man, because this match didn't help anyone. And what I hate about, and to me, is the problem with the tag team division is that, I mean, every tag team should be on the same level as far as being like competitors. You know, it shouldn't be like you get just the Usos and New Day and the Bludgeon Brothers, the top tag teams, and you got Chad and Gable and Fandango. I mean, and you got Fandango and Tyler Breeze. You know, it's like they're like the B-list teams. Not all these teams should be on the same level as far as being competitive. You know, it wasn't like that in the old days. Every tag team was competitive. They were all on the same level. Any tag team could fight any other tag team, but it's not showing in this case, you know. So
yeah, and you know what? Well, you know what bothered me, Sabretooth? What bothered me is if you're going to let anybody take the pin, I don't think it should have been Mojo. I mean, you just turned Mojo, you flipped him heel. He's pretty good on the mic. He'd make a good old school heel. If you wanted the Fashion Police and Ty Dillinger to win, I think it would have been better if you had one of the Fashion Police just shock, you know, Gable. Come up with a quick little roll up, 1, 2, 3. That way you could have had Gable and Benjamin at least say, because they were the ones backstage saying, you guys are clowns, you're not even wrestlers, you're just clowns. That would have been a good feud going forward to say, oh man, we got embarrassed by them. We took them way too lightly, and we got embarrassed by them. This way, I just think it hurts Mojo, Todd.
You're absolutely right. This is hurts more of Mojo Rawley than the Fashion Police and Ty Dillinger there. And like you said before, I'd rather see Mojo Rawley just go up to the upper mid card status than the lower mid card thing.
Yeah, I thought they were going to do that with Mojo. I mean, a lot of people don't like him. Whatever. I just think you could have got better use out of him than this. But anyway, let's get on to the opening contest, which it's so funny. After the pre-show is over. And by the way, did you hear, I don't know if any of you guys watched the pre-show, but Sam Roberts was in rare form last night. Sam Roberts may not get another gig with the WWE because Sam Roberts was shooting from the hip. When they mentioned, and by the way, I said, I bet you they opened with Nakamura and Rusev. I just knew they were going to open with him. And when Sam Roberts was asked about this. Sam Roberts says basically, well, I guess they hope that Nakamura is popular enough to stop the crowd from cheering for Rusev. And my jaw hit the ground. I'm like, what did he just say? He literally on the pre-show panel came right out and said, I guess the WWE is trying to use Nakamura to stifle the crowd and stop them from chanting for Rusev. And I'm like, whoa, there's a rare moment of truth on a WWE pre-show panel. I thought Booker T was going to swallow his gum. They couldn't shut him up quick enough. It's pretty funny. Because that's exactly what they tried to do. Did it work? Well, chance of Rusev Day. There were chance of Nakamura. Was it a good match? It really was. It was a very good match. And they let Rusev get plenty of offense and come close a couple of times, depending on Nakamura. The problem with this match is not that the athletes weren't good or that they didn't have a great match. The problem with this match is nobody wanted to see either one of these guys lose. The fans love Nakamura and they love Rusev. Therefore, this match was irrelevant. So regardless of who the fans rooted for, and most of them were 50-50, but regardless, it was one of those things where, I really like Nakamura, so I guess I hope he wins, but I like Rusev too. Or I really like Rusev, I wish they'd push him, but I know they're not going to let Nakamura lose prior to WrestleMania. So really, the match didn't have any fire behind it. It was just a match. It was a well-executed match, and the crowd tried to get into it. But at the same time, you know, again, nobody wanted to see the outcome. Nobody wanted to see the outcome. And yeah, Sabretooth was saying, you know, he sold that super kick from Rusev. Well, there's no question. Look, Nakamura's not an idiot, and Nakamura's not a rookie. Nakamura's been around the block and back, and he understands what he has to do. And in the NXT, my faulting with Nakamura was that he wouldn't, much like a lot of the Japanese, they'll sell until the match is over, and then they're fine and dandy, and they jump up like they've never been hurt. I think Nakamura quickly adapted and said, look, this is not what they want. I get what they want. And he can deliver it. And he certainly sold Rusev as being way more powerful than him. And he even went so far as to give that Kinshasa to the back of his neck and the front before he pinned him. Not just one shot. So they did it. He did his job. My fault is not with the match. The match was good. My fault with the match, Mike, is that nobody really cared about the outcome due to the fact that both guys are so popular. Never should have been booked together to begin with.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that we're probably going to be saying basically the same thing for most of these matches on this card. Very solid wrestling matches, very well-performed wrestling matches. On any other given card, they'd be very good wrestling matches, but in this card, because of the way they're booked, because the way they're written, because the people didn't care. I mean, you know,
that's the problem. I mean, look at it this way: if Rusev was the big villain that he was, that almost unbeatable Bulgarian villain, what a match we would have had, rooting for Nakamura, saying, oh, my God, it looks like Nakamura's not going to be able to win. Oh, my God, Rusev survived this, and oh, he's got him in this. There were many times in this match where I say to myself, if one of these guys was the clear-cut guy that you wanted to win, you'd be on the edge of your seat. But because either guy is okay to win, you're just laying back saying, okay, let me just watch what they do. And that's never good enough, Sabretooth, for a wrestling match, is to just say, let me just, you know, see how well they wrestle.
Yeah, but and I'm watching this match. Yeah, I'm saddened by the fact I knew how it was going to. It was a good match, but just knowing that how it was going to end sort of dampened the whole mood of it. Because like, yep. I said yesterday, Nakamura didn't need that match. I mean, really. He doesn't need a match until he fights AJ Styles at WrestleMania. Sure, he can be on TV on SmackDown, have him on TV doing backstage segments or whatever. But to me, It's like that freaking pro basketball when a team wins the semifinals and they go to the finals. They don't need to play another game to the finals. I mean, to just sit back and rest and wait for the other team to get there. They don't have to. He doesn't need another match to down the WrestleMania. Have him on TV, yeah, but he doesn't need another match.
No, look, I agree. He didn't need another win. He didn't need anything. Now, Corey Graves did his best to say the same thing. He doesn't really need this match. Why is he in it? And then later says, you know, maybe he did need it to hone his skills for AJ Styles. Whatever. I mean, you can spin this any way you want. The fact of the matter is the crowd could have been very well more into this had they cared about one of the guys winning. But in reality, most of this crowd, 80% of this crowd was like, whatever, because I like them both. And that's usually not the way you want a match, Todd. Usually you want a clear-cut guy you're rooting for.
You're absolutely right there. You need a clear-cut match right there. Like you said, I never liked Nakamura in the beginning, but it was one of the better matches I ever seen him in against Rusev. And I was like, I was sort of impressed with the match he was also.
Nakamura's getting it. You know, I think Nakamura came to NXT and was just like, you know, let me just... I think he was under this misconception that this is the minor leagues and I'm above the minor leagues, so I shouldn't really oversell or I shouldn't do whatever to a lot of these guys until Bobby Roode and a couple people got in there, but then and Samoa Joe. But I think he realizes now. I think he gets it and says a little different style here. He's been there long enough to realize what the WWE wants, and now we're getting Nakamura WWE version, which is working a little bit better. Anyway, Bobby Roode takes on Randy Orton. And I'm going to pat myself on the back for this because while most people were saying, you know, Roode is boring and Orton mails it in a lot, this is not going to be good. I told everybody, I said, these guys' styles are really perfect for each other. They're going to put on a really good match because their styles are going to work together. I just knew it. And this was a really, really solid match. This reminded me of an old school match. I'm watching this match, and the first thing that comes to my mind is, I'll bet you some modern fans are going to say, this is very boring. I bet you, you know, 12-year-olds are saying, this is boring. But if you're, you know, above 25, you remember some of this style, you know, and you're like, yeah, this is the way wrestling used to be, where it was a little slow-paced at times. It made a build. They did a very good job. Both of them did a good job. Randy Orton did not mail it in last night. He did not mail it in last night. Randy Orton tried, and he tried hard. And you could see that when Randy Orton does try or has a lot of respect for who he's in the ring with, he can work a really good match. My fault with Randy Orton is he knows he's winning. He works a good match. He knows he's losing. He sometimes doesn't. So when Randy Orton was working such a really good, solid match, I said to myself, he's winning. Because the tip-off on Randy Orton is that. Every time his work rate is up three notches than usual, he's going to win. Bobby Roode, fantastic job. I'm not a huge fan of Bobby Roode, but this is the style Bobby Roode can work. Bobby Roode has trouble with the more modern styles and him. It clashes. This is the type of wrestlers he should be in the ring with. I give this match very high marks. But again, nobody really cared about the winner. It's like, if Randy Orton wins, great. If Bobby Roode wins, great. You know, we're expecting Jinder Mahal to maybe factor into the ending, but he didn't. He did come down at the end. And we finally see a little bit of a mean streak in Bobby Roode where he lays out Randy Orton also after initially saving him from Jinder Mahal. And it looks like we're probably on the road to seeing yet another three-way dance. Now, we won't get into the tag team match yet, but this could be three-man matches at WrestleMania. Three. That's a lot. Anyway, Mike, what did you think of the Randy Orton match with Bobby Roode?
I liked it, you know, and like you said, it's the whole thing. That's the type of match. And look, and I enjoyed what they did when they showed they went back and reviewed during the match the superplex that actually Roode did a very, very good job of selling that superplex. You know, And
yep.
And that was a very good move. And one other thing about the last match, I tell you what, they have to do something with Aiden English. That guy is so talented. The guy came out rapping, for God's sake. You know?
Yeah, I know. It's pretty funny, actually. Look, and he's got a microphone that says Rusev. He's got a Rusev Day microphone, which clearly shows that the WWE understands the value of this, but they're just not running with it yet. And I just don't understand why they felt this was the best move right now for Rusev. It's almost like they say you got to hit rock bottom before we reinvent you. And I don't agree with that philosophy. I think you got to strike while the iron's hot, Sabretooth.
Yeah, you do. And back in the old days, they would have. I mean, like I said, I mean, if like they have, they seem to have a problem with these characters after a while. Like, you know, the ones who they should, I mean, they have, they don't, like you said, they don't know when like to pull that button on characters. Either they don't, or, I mean, if like either they don't know or they just don't want to. And it's like they're, like you said yesterday, it's like they're afraid that like, that they have to put the kibosh on something that's hot. You know, they can't let it outshine something else. You know, I think it's what leaves the roof off.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I don't know. All I know is that they should have struck while the iron was hot with that one. But Randy Orton and Bobby Roode, Todd, I wrote you during it, and I said this was a really good old school style match, and I enjoyed this match way more than I even thought I was going to.
You're absolutely right there. That was one of the best old. It was like it had like the old school feel, like back in the day with like Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair.
Sure did.
Those kind of matches with them in it back then to now,
yep.
With the old school feel. And I was like, this is pretty cool. I like the pace of it.
And I'll tell you something else. It came close to being the best match of the night because while the – and we'll get to that in a minute, but the tag team match, of course, had that gimmick that kind of prevented it from being the best match of the night. So let's go to the ladies. Let's go to the ladies, and we get the tag team match. Natalya and Carmella against Becky Lynch and Naomi. I was expecting very little from this match. I was expecting very little from this match. And what I came away with is two things that I think is critical. One is, I don't know what they're doing with Becky Lynch because she's easily the most popular girl there. The crowd is 100% on her side all the time. They're chanting, "We want Becky," when Naomi's in the ring. Becky is over. And I don't know why you're keeping her down, because she's over. I've been watching this for not just, you know, weeks, months. Becky Lynch is over. Having said that, if anyone who watched that match last night does not think that Carmella is really, really solid, you better go back and watch the match again. Carmella's cranking. She is cranking right now. She never breaks her character. Everything she does is logical to that character. Her timing is impeccable. Her pacing is really, really good. She hits all of her spots. She looks like she's fighting, not just going through the dance. I'm a big fan. Several women on the SmackDown roster that I'm a big fan of. And I just don't think they're being used to their capacity. And she's one of them, even though she did get the pin, which pleasantly surprised me. However, you know, you got to run with Becky Lynch here a little bit because she's extremely popular. But you got to give Carmella credit where credit is due. Absolutely got to give her credit where credit is due. There are times in that match. Here's what she does that a lot of wrestlers don't do. I believe in my whole heart that when she gets in there to wrestle, she is that character until it's over and she gets behind the curtain. A lot of people get in there and they walk to the ring and they're like, "I'm my character." And then they get in the ring and they're like, "I'm just me. I'm just me. I'm not thinking like my character. I'm not acting like my character. I'm acting like me." Carmella doesn't do that. Carmella is Carmella all the time, in the ring even. And I like it. I absolutely buy what she's selling. I thought she did an excellent job last night, Mike, and I was pleasantly surprised they won.
You know, I was the one I was the one that called it. I called Carmella winning this match, and obviously, you know, I don't know if it's changed that what they feel about the guy, the person who holds that Money in the Bank briefcase doesn't have to win. But if this is a good harbinger for that, then at some point we speculated, and we'll get to the other women's match later. We speculated that that's when she cashed it in, but again, she didn't. But again, she, you're right. She's got that character down pat, and she's technically really, really good on the ring, and she sells the right way. I mean, we talk about Charlotte, but she's kind of the female Ric Flair, kind of, you know, because
in a way,
I mean, you know, Ric Flair was a guy that lived his gimmick 24/7. Now she doesn't go, I don't think she goes that far, but she's close.
She stays in character in that ring, which is very important because some girls don't. We'll mention that a little bit later. Another girl that does it very well, better than I thought. But this match, Sabretooth, was way better than I thought. And it really made me think that, you know, they could go far with Carmella if they want to.
Right. And I'm so glad she got that. Yeah. And I'm so glad that she's the one who got the pin. She got the pin. And like you said, it's like her whole style in that ring is like she's in a fight. Last night, she was pulling hair, running her mouth.
Yep.
I mean, she is that character, and I love it. And even like, and it's like she doesn't waste, a move inside that ring. It's like if she gets over on you, she doesn't like showboat or nothing. She goes right to the next thing. And I, like you said, like she's in a real fight. She doesn't waste any moves in that ring.
Yeah, and that separates her from some of these girls who like showboat and prance and they almost set up for the next move. They're almost like, okay, what's the next dance step? And she doesn't do that. She really comes across looking like she's in a fight with another girl, and that's why I like Carmella Todd. I think she could go far.
You're absolutely right there. Carmella could go far into the women's division, but they're not giving her that push to cash in that Money in the Bank briefcase, and you need that big push right there to go far.
Yeah, and I think the whole thing with Natty holding up the briefcase was a reminder, look, she's missed Money in the Bank. Look, she won a match prior to WrestleMania, and, you know, she's going to probably try to cash it in. I think that's what that was all about. Do I think in a heartbeat she's going to cash it in at WrestleMania? Yes. Do I think she's going to win it? Like some people are saying, no, I don't. I think she's going to drop it, and then they're just going to go on with a different angle. That's almost like an albatross around your neck. The Money in the Bank has become an albatross around your neck, almost like winning the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal has. Let's talk about the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal winners. Where's their careers went? Cesaro, well, he's a tag team champion, but man, after he won, they did exactly zero with him for a long time. Baron Corbin, psh, they're not doing much. He's always in the mix, but he's never winning. Mojo Rawley? Come on. Same way with Money in the Bank lately. Money in the Bank's like your death knell. Corbin's done both. So anyway, let's get to the tag team match. You know that you're good when just the entrances. And by the way, I think the New Day was fantastic last night. Fantastic. Especially when they said, you know, the Usos call us entertainers or whatever. Well, guess what? There's a lot of people here who pay their hard-earned money to come and be entertained. They work hard all week. They save up their money to buy tickets to come here to watch us to be entertained. So, of course, we're entertaining. But when the time comes to fight, we can fight. We didn't get to be tag team champions by, you know, eating pancakes. I thought that was fantastic. And you know you got a good thing going when you got one team in the ring, and as soon as the other team walks down, you start to get that goosebumps. And that's what happened to me. I'm just like, man, these guys, they could fight every pay-per-view, and I'm okay with it. There's just that aura. They got it. Whatever the hell it is, those guys, those two teams can fight literally forever. It's like the Freebirds and the Von Erichs. You could just keep going. Just keep going, and everything's fine. There doesn't even need to be a reason at this stage. You've given us all the backstory. You've given us all the reason. So that's always phenomenal when you get that. And that's always like an organic thing that happens. It's almost impossible to create that. And they got it. Now, having said that, they put on a decent match before the Bludgeon Brothers come down. And the idea is the Bludgeon Brothers have robbed the fans of this brilliant match that they're going to see. Well, you know, but the smart fans realize, no, the WWE robbed us of it. So, you know, it makes it a little bit less. But still, Bludgeon Brothers did their job well, even used the hammers. And if anybody needs a bonus for this match, it's Xavier Woods. Because not only does Xavier Woods take a very dangerous powerbomb on those stairs, and the reason it's dangerous is because the momentum, the inertia from falling, makes your head snap back. And if your head snaps back and you hit them steel stairs with your head from that distance, then you got a problem. So you've got to be fully aware that you got to keep your head tucked when you're going down on those stairs, and you can't let the inertia from falling snap your head back. And the guys who are doing it have got to try to make sure that even if you do snap your head back, it's going to be air and not the stairs because of the way they've planted you on them stairs. So that's not – that move is not one of those lollipop, we're not going to get hurt moves. You get hurt. That's a dangerous move. And don't kid yourself that it doesn't hurt. Of course it hurts. But that's not the reason he needs the bonus. When this match is over, everybody's laying in a corner. Big E does his typical, I blink hard when I'm hurt. The Usos are holding their ribs. But Xavier Woods looks hurt. Xavier Woods is literally twitching. His eyes are kind of distant. And I'm saying to myself, man, he's selling that freak out of this. If he was told to sell this much, something's up. They're going to say he's injured. They're going to say he's really injured. And that's exactly what they did. They've set up perfectly for a three-way tag. This is the only match that you had some vested interest in. Again, you didn't care who won, I don't think. The Usos or the New Day, because you both teams you kind of like. But you knew that the Bludgeon Brothers were coming down. You're just waiting for it. If you listened to our show yesterday, I said, just watch the curtain. They'll be coming. And by the end of that match, you say to yourself, the WWE set themselves up pretty well. Because what's going to end up happening is you're going to get that three-way dance. And it will be a lot more about a New Day trying to get revenge on the Bludgeon Brothers and also the Usos, and at the same time trying to keep those tag team belts. So there's a story to be told there, Mike. And I think this match probably had the best branches on the tree of all of them.
They did. It did. And look, here's how good this was, though. Think about this. Had they let this match go to its logical conclusion, where there was maybe a win, maybe a loss, maybe a tie, whatever, but there was an outcome other than what we got. This could have been one of those what they call instant classics. That's the way they were doing this thing. I mean, they even went to the extra thing of having the team switch, do each other's moves.
Yeah,
you know,
pretty cool.
Do each other's move sets, you know?
Yep.
And that I enjoyed that. And look, this is another one of these 10. I mean, you look at the whole pay-per-view in general, and we said it before the pay-per-view happened that there weren't a lot of they weren't as many matches as they were, but what they did with these matches is average 12 minutes a match, and that's without the entrances, you know? You know what you're gonna get with the instances. Yeah, 6 minutes, 3 minutes, 3 minutes per team, or 3 minutes per person. But after that, it was at least a 10-minute match for every single one of these matches. They let the matches develop.
Sure did. They sure did. I was happy with the match overall, Sabretooth. Of course, you want it to go longer, but the gimmick of the Bludgeon Brothers coming down, I think, was timed pretty well, and it led to, you know, what we're going to get at WrestleMania, so it's okay.
Yeah, but I love the match, though. I mean, and the thing is, like, it's so obvious that these guys, these two teams, I mean, they have their chemistry, and you can tell by the way they – by like the way they interact with each other in that ring, they love working with each other in that ring. I mean, it's like they're almost like playing with each other. It's like they enjoy it so much working with each other, and it really shows. And it was a good match until it was stopped. But and my one drawback about it was like if they should have played their music when they came out. If they should have like came out rushing out to attack those guys. And I love how they saw the Brothers after how like when they how they power slammed the Duso and had him on the ground. Harper slaps Rowan, and Rowan picks him up and slams him on top of the Usos.
Yeah.
I mean, that really showed what kind of team these guys are. That was to, like, put themselves, that was, like, use each other as well. You know what I'm saying? How out there and crazy these guys are. And I love that.
Yeah, no, listen, they did a great job of building up the Bludgeon Brothers. You're right. You're absolutely right about the teams. Usos and New Day, here's the deal with that. There are guys who are so professional, they could work with anyone. Look at Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart hated each other, but they could work good matches. The majority of people won't take chances, won't go that extra mile unless there's a tremendous amount of trust and genuine like for the people they're in there with. So if you're in there with guys that you hang with, if you're in there with guys that you consider friends, you can go that extra mile because you could say, I know they're looking for my best interest. I can trust these guys. You know what I mean? And you do have fun. Of course you have fun. You're in there with your friends. You know, you're in there with guys you like. So that makes a big difference. I always said, if you see one of these outstanding matches where they really throw it all on the line, you can pretty much guarantee those guys behind the scenes are friends. Because it's logical that you put your trust and you'd give your all for something like that, rather than someone who you say, I don't really know that guy, you know. I don't know how far he's going to go to protect me. I'm sure he will, but you know your friend's going to. So that's why they put on such great matches. And I do think this, with the Bludgeon Brothers at WrestleMania, which is it will be, I think that they'll put on a good match too. Now let's get to Charlotte Flair and Ruby Riott. Ruby Riott comes out without the Riott Squad. And I got to tell you, again, I'm saying to myself, the conclusion of this match is not in question. And no one thinks Ruby Riott's winning. And to be honest with you, nobody cares if Charlotte Flair wins because they know she's winning and it's no big deal. But these two went a little farther than most normal women's division matches go. They told a pretty damn good story. And there was a couple of moments in that match where I said, maybe they're going to throw a monkey wrench into this. And I think Ruby Riott showed a lot of unique offense that I haven't seen before. That stage dive backwards thing is pretty cool. There's some cool things that she did. And Charlotte certainly gave her plenty of offense and sold her very well. And even on the after show, talking smack, if you watched it, Charlotte still sold Ruby Riott and said, you know, I'm not selling her short. There were times in that match I thought I was losing. She really brought her A game. She's way better than, you know, I expected her to be. And, you know, this was tough. So I think they put on a great match. Again, fans aren't really invested in it because they knew who was going to win and they didn't really care much for Ruby Riott. Asuka comes out. You know, listen, you either like Asuka or you don't. And I'm not going to lie to you, I don't. I just don't. She'd make a really great heel, but I don't like her as a face because I think she's annoying. She's just an annoying person. I don't like the stupid dance on the way to the ring. I don't like her facial expressions. I just don't like anything about her. I just don't like her. She's an okay wrestler. I think she's overrated. I don't think she's the reinvention of, you know, the great women, greatest of all time women's wrestlers, but she's okay. But really all she does is smile and bop her head and point to a WrestleMania sign, and I guess the rub on that is she challenges Charlotte. Why she can't just simply say, I choose you to challenge at WrestleMania, that's not hard. WrestleMania is the same in Japanese or American, so all she would have to say is the words, I choose you at. You can't manage that? I can count to four in Japanese. I ni so shi. See, I can do it. So I'm pretty sure you could do it too. So, I don't know. She smiles, bops her head, points at a sign, and leaves. It'll be a good match. And it leaves exactly what we said was going to happen, which is Nia Jax versus Alexa Bliss at WrestleMania. We know that was going to happen. But aside from that, Mike, I thought this was a way better match than I expected to get from Ruby Riott.
It was. And again, another 12 to 15 minute match. And look, one particular spot that surprised me that they got that looked like it was a fluid thing is that whole kind of Alabama jam into the turnbuckle that Charlotte gave to Ruby Riott. That could have hurt her in many ways, a concussion, a neck, you know, but it looked like it went out smooth, and it looked like that whole match looked like they're close friends or whatever, and it was a very smooth wrestle match, you know, in terms of going from move to move. They didn't look like they were preening too much. Yeah, Charlotte did her woo and kind of strutted to set up her figure four, but you expect that from Charlotte. But other than that, it was boom, 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 and it didn't look like it was stopping the, you know.
No, there wasn't any real major hesitations. They did a very smooth, good match. I thought she sold Ruby Riott very well. Riott performed a lot better than I've seen her perform since she's been in the WWE Sabretooth. And I know you said they should have saved Asuka for SmackDown. I agree with that. I agree with that. It would have been a better moment. I guess the reason they didn't is because then they'd have to do something with Asuka tonight. And they want to do something with Nia Jax tonight. So now that we know, probably the reason they said, let's bring Asuka to the pay-per-view is because now tonight they can further the angle with Nia and Alexa Bliss, knowing that she's not going to have to fight Asuka. I suppose that's why they did it, Sabretooth.
Yeah, but even still, it just irked me, though. I mean, it just irked me that she, you know, I mean, like that match was better than I was expecting. You know, I mean, like I said, I mean, like because Ruby Riott, she reminded me of Carmella the way Carmella is. I mean, she came in that ring to fight. I mean, it was like a contrast in styles in that ring. Charlotte was wrestling. Riott came to fight. You know, she was brawling. You know, so I love. It was a pretty good match. And then, like, to have that just taken away from him, having Asuka come out and doing her primping and showboating, I mean, it just irked me.
Second time she did it at the Women's Royal Rumble and ruined that, too. You know, I mean, the afterwards coming out and raining on everybody's parade with that, saying, I don't know who I'm going to choose and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of crazy. Yeah, I'm not a big Asuka fan. I'm just not. But I'll tell you what, I'm sort of a Ruby Riott fan now, Todd, because I think she did a phenomenal job last night.
You're absolutely right there. She did a good job last night as doing that in that match with Charlotte. Like you said with Asuka, I wasn't, like you said, I'm in the same way with you with Asuka. I'm not really a big fan. To me, as well, she's way overrated as a female competitor. I'd rather see her as a
heel. Yeah, me too. I'd rather see her as a heel. But I do think that they probably had to put Asuka on the pay-per-view, because then what are you going to do Monday night tonight? You're going to have Alexa Bliss still saying, I guess I'm fighting Asuka. You know, you needed to get that out of the way so you could do something with Nia tonight, I guess. Anyway, let's get to the main event, because, boy, do we have a lot to talk about. And we may run over time on this. You know, I'm not 100% sure how to take this. And I'll tell you why. First off, I guess they threw the Dolph Ziggler thing out the window. They figured we can't do that. And I guess they figured with all this backlash, and there was a ton of it, about why did you lead us down the primrose path of Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, and Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon if you're not going to do anything with it. And I think the WWE might have actually woke up and said, maybe we can't do that. We really did make SmackDown all about them for months, and I guess we can't walk away from it this quickly. So I thought what they did was kind of interesting in one aspect, because Sami Zayn did exactly what I said he should do. And he backstage said, I never said I was going to lay down for you on Raw. I needed that win to keep me relevant. I said I was going to lay down for you tonight, and I still will. That was brilliant. Now, Kevin Owens didn't buy it and walked away. But we don't know. As fans, we're left to wonder, what is that true, or is he lying? Is he still trying to get over on Owens? What's up? So that, I thought that was brilliant. Why Shane McMahon was even out there is anyone's guess in the world. I thought it was to set up the Dolph Ziggler thing that they were talking about, because never, you know, never too soon. I mean, WrestleMania's around the corner. But still, and then we get this half-assed thing where Daniel Bryan's doing something with his family. Well, oh, okay. What we get is John Cena hitting everybody with the AA, except AJ Styles. And they all roll out of the ring. So the AJ Styles and John Cena can have their moment. And again, these five- and six-man matches always end up with there's a bunch of guys on the floor so two guys can get in all their spots. That's all it always ends up being, so I'm not really sure why anyone loves these matches. We never see, like, three or four guys in unison doing things. Very seldom. Very seldom. And we always see the, I hit my finisher, but then another guy comes in the ring and hits his on me, and then that guy, another guy hits his on that guy, and we always see that. That's getting old. So was there any ground broke in this main event last night? None. AJ Styles basically wasn't even in it. He did a little bit of stuff. Then he took a terrific spill through the table. That looked great. That looked great. And there were moments that looked good. There were a couple of, you know, good spots in this match. Dolph Ziggler was very good. If you're not a Dolph Ziggler fan, I don't know why. He's very good. Baron Corbin flubbed up a few things, but he's whatever. You know, he's a big dude if you could use him right, but so far they're not. Sami Zayn's way better as a heel than he ever was as a face. And the best moment in the match, I warned everybody. I said, this match isn't about AJ Styles. This match is about Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. You can say it's for the belt all you want. It's a Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens at the focal point of this match. Told you that yesterday. Told you that before yesterday. And that's exactly what it was. The only thing we cared about in this match is Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, what's going to happen? And at one point, Sami Zayn lays down and says, I told you I was going to do this. Oddly, Kevin Owens doesn't even give him the... I thought what was going to happen is Owens would go down for the pin and Sami Zayn would wrap him up and try to go for the pin. Instead, Kevin Owens pretended he was going down and then grabbed Sami Zayn like he was going to beat on him or something, and then Zayn rolled him over for the pin, which I think was a mistake. But anyway, then they really start going at each other, which leads to Kevin Owens accidentally super kicking Shane McMahon, who is not an unintelligent man and certainly had to know he was aiming for Sami Zayn. But nonetheless, it doesn't matter. Because when Kevin Owens goes to pin Sami Zayn, Shane McMahon pulls the referee right out of the ring, which should have been and was booked to look like a clear victory for Kevin Owens. But then unusually, and makes me scratch my head, when Kevin Owens is about to be pinned by Sami Zayn, he pulls Sami Zayn out of the ring. Literally did this time. Involve himself in the finish of a match where he now changed the finish of the match in the booking. Twice. This leads to AJ Styles recovering, and when it looks like Kevin Owens is going to win, AJ Styles hits the flying forearm, boom, 1, 2, 3, AJ Styles retains. And I say to myself, how is Shane McMahon going to justify that? You might be able to justify that Kevin Owens pulled the referee out, but why Sami Zayn? And on Talking Smack, he basically says, maybe I went too far. Maybe I didn't. I don't know. I don't regret it right now. Maybe I'll regret it when in the morning. But look, I don't like either one of these guys, and I got kicked right in the face. As far as I'm concerned, that's provoking me. Provoking you? Why the hell were you at ringside to begin with? So I don't know where they're going with this. I do not know where they're going with this. My assumption of where they're going with this is that Daniel Bryan is going to say, we can't have this. We can't have you doing one thing, me wanting another, you doing one thing, me wanting the other. One of the two of us has got to have complete control of SmackDown. Free reign. Or it's not going to work. And maybe they'll each pick a wrestler at WrestleMania or something, or Kevin Owens will fight, or Sami Zayn will fight. I don't know what the hell's going to happen. I doubt Daniel Bryan's getting back in the ring. But I just thought it didn't do AJ any favors because it made it look like, well, AJ would have lost. AJ's not really the champion. AJ got lucky. He got help. And for that reason, I found this kind of flat, Mike. I didn't think it was as good a main event as the rest of the matches that night were.
Yeah, I thought it so too. But also what I thought is, okay, when he did that to those two guys, I thought, okay, here we go on with this co-championship bit. And basically what, if you caught what he said, you know, if you caught what how I believe it was Graves, what Corey Graves said, he said, basically, he screwed both guys. You know, he screwed.
Yeah.
I get what they were trying to do with him, with Sami Zayn laying down. I get that, but I also get, I kind of don't get why would he, unless they're trying to play up the fact of what Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have been saying for months about, well, you don't like either one of us, and you're trying to screw us, and you're trying
right.
to do it over and over and over and over and over again, and this is just a straw that broke the camel's back, you know? So that's the only way I can buy this, is that particular thing.
The whole problem with this gimmick, though, Sabretooth, is this. If Sami Zayn was going to lay down for Kevin Owens, or Sami Zayn was going to say, I want to make sure you're the champion, then all you have to do is tell Kevin Owens that in private, and then the second the bell rings, you lock up with Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens puts you in a headlock, and you say, I quit. I give up. And the referee says, that guy just submitted. Kevin Owens is the champion. That's all you'd really have to do. So the actual premise of it doesn't make any sense.
Right. And also that segment where he says, you know, where he tries to get back in Kevin's good graces, talking about, I said I'd lay down for you at the pay-per-view, not Tuesday. That would have made sense if he hadn't said what he said after that match on Tuesday, after where he said, it's my time, I've been this and that. Then that would have made sense, but he said that. So, I mean, so it didn't make sense for him to come back talking about, I'm still.
You know why they did that, Sabretooth? They did that because they knew they were wrong. They did that because they thought about it and said, oh, man, we should have made it that Sami Zayn said, well, I needed this match, but I'll still lay down for you at the pay-per-view. That was their mistake, and then they said, oh, this is a better angle, and so they just hope we forgot about that.
No, I didn't. It was profound what he said. That was the end of the match. He's walking up that aisle, and she stopped and asked him, why did he do it? I mean, it ended on that note, so you can't forget it.
You're right.
And also, as far as the match goes, how come, I don't know what it is about Baron Corbin. Why is he such a badass? He's like a force of destruction on the pay-per-view, but we don't see that every Tuesday when he's in that ring.
We don't see
nothing like that from him.
I know. He's Brock Lesnar at the pay-per-view, and he's Zack Ryder on SmackDown. I don't know. I don't know. Todd, this one was the only one that I can honestly say I was a little bit disappointed in some of this.
You're absolutely right there. It is disappointing, some of the spots in that match. Like you said before, with the Sami Zayn thing, I like him as better as a heel than a face too, and it works better that way.
The thing about the match that I didn't care for is we are left with the overall impression that AJ Styles is now not really the champion. And Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have a legitimate... See, the heels should never have a legitimate gripe, because then you're not a heel. The heels should never say, I would be the champion if it weren't for outside interference or something horrible, because then the logic falls on the side of the heel. And I don't like that. I just don't like it. I would have much rather had Sami Zayn not say he was going to lay down for Kevin Owens. Just the opposite, to say, listen, guess what? Friendship out the window, pal. This is about the WWE title. And let them guys be at each other's throats for weeks before this pay-per-view. Shane McMahon sitting there, can't wait to see these two guys kill each other, and then Sami Zayn really does lay down and Kevin Owens is the champion. And Shane McMahon is outraged and says, this is an outrage. You did that on purpose. You totally screwed the fans. You totally screwed AJ Styles. You totally screwed the system. And I'm not going to let it stand. And then, of course, you could have had Daniel Bryan say he's legitimately the champion. You can't make that rule. And what are you talking about? He didn't even try. That's stealing the belt. Then you could have had that little pay-per-view in between, or that little match on SmackDown in between, where something like this happens and AJ gets the belt back. Because then at least he looks like the champion. Right now, AJ looks like he's only the champion because Shane McMahon wants him to be the champion. And that's what a heel does. Not what a face does, Sabretooth, so that's why I'm concerned about this finish.
Yeah, but the whole thing reminds me of one of those cop shows where you got good cop, bad cop. You got Daniel Bryan here with the good cop, giving everybody the opportunity. And then you got Shane McMahon playing the bad cop who catches a murderer but somehow violates his rights. So the murderer has a good case. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You're like,
yeah,
you can't, McMahon's a bad
can't
cop.
Let the heel have a legitimate gripe.
Exactly. He let the bad guys, he let the bad guys have a, you know, the bad guys got a point. You know, the murderer has a point. You know, it's right.
Yeah, you can't have it. You cannot have that. You cannot have the heels have a legitimate gripe, because then they're not the heels, Mike.
You're right. This whole thing started the night after Sami Zayn pulled him off that table. You know, and then they came up and said, look, Sami Zayn said, look, I've been watching this thing, and we don't get along, we haven't gotten along in the past, but I've seen you, and I've seen what they're trying to do, what Shane McMahon's trying to do to you, and he's trying to screw you, and he's probably going to try to screw me for doing what I did to you, so... That's when this whole thing started, and after a while, it kind of dropped it, but then this makes it look like they're trying to go back to that, you know?
Yeah, I'm very confused. I'm very confused, and we're going to be running a little bit overtime, folks, so if you're in the chat room, you might lose us, but stay tuned, because we're going to run a little overtime on this. I knew we would. Look, the problem is, you want AJ Styles going into WrestleMania being the legitimate champion who overcame insurmountable odds, and now he has to beat Nakamura. What you do have it currently is AJ Styles, who should not be the champion and did not win the match fairly, going into WrestleMania to face Nakamura. There were ways you could have got the same thing with the exact same thing happening between Shane McMahon and Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens and still make it look like AJ Styles legitimately won. But you didn't do it. Now, Shane McMahon on Talking Smack was very much acting, I don't want to say like a heel, but it was close. Because when Renee Young started asking him hard questions, she said, you affected the outcome of this match. You interjected yourself into this match, and you changed the outcome of this match. he said, yeah, I guess I did. But you know what? You try getting kicked in the face and see what happens. And she said, well, it was clearly an accident. And he says, well, yeah, you know, on how, you might be right. Okay. But, hey, at the time, I got kicked in the face. And I was angry and I was upset. And besides that fact, let's not forget that this is the same guy who put his hands on my father. How would you feel if this guy put his hands on your father and everything? And the problem and the reason this doesn't work is because all Shane McMahon has to say is, how come on Raw the general manager has zero power over Stephanie and Triple H? They can come out and fire the general manager if they want. They can come out and override every decision he makes. But on SmackDown, Shane McMahon can't do that. Shane McMahon can't simply say, listen, I don't want Owens here. He's fired. Of course he could. That's why the premise of this doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Now, if they'd have done something where Kevin Owens says, look, I'll go in the Hell in a Cell with you, but if I win, you can't fire me. Because I know that's the next thing you're going to do, is you're just going to fire me if I win. And Shane McMahon had said, you know what? If you win, you're right. I can't fire you. Daniel could still, but I can't. Then it would make sense. And you knew you were going to do this, so why didn't you do that? At some point, you have to have this make some sense. This has got to come to a head, and it's got to come to a head Tuesday. And I don't know what they want to do with Daniel Bryan riding in to save the day. Why is he riding in to save the day on bad guys? That's the thing I don't understand. It would have been so much better if Sami Zayn had never revealed he was going to lay down but did it and actually had Kevin Owens win the belt and those guys yucking it up saying, we had this plan for I don't know how long, Shane McMahon being furious, saying you basically just gave the middle finger to the WWE belt. You rigged it. You totally rigged this whole thing. It wasn't even a fair contest to begin with because you knew what was going to happen. AJ never stood a chance going in. AJ furious saying, if they're just going to do that, who couldn't do that? That doesn't mean he's a champion and beat anybody. And this would have been the time that Daniel Bryan said, yeah, this can't stand. You can't do that. Now you have gone too far. And I agree with Shane, and we're going to have to have a match. We're going to have a match prior to WrestleMania. And that's it. And then if you wanted all hell to break loose with Sami Zayn coming down and Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon being there and all hell broke loose and somehow AJ Styles gets the belt back, that's fine. That at least makes sense. But this way, Sabretooth, you got Daniel Bryan riding in on Tuesday night to take the sides of the bad guys who, by the way, are right.
Right, and what I don't get, though, is where is Daniel Bryan, though? I mean, okay, the week before he walked out to go home, he wasn't there this week. I mean, but it's the work. He has to have some invested interest in this. I mean, I don't know why they're keeping him off the show. I mean, is something going on with him right now or something or what?
I don't know. That's why I don't want to come down on him because I don't know. I don't know if there's something actually personally that he needs to take care of, if there's some issues, or if this is just a work to say, oh, we got to anticipate him coming back on Tuesday. I don't know. But so I won't say. There could be legitimate reason. I don't know why he's not there. If there was no legitimate reason, then they're doing it as a part of the show, as like a work to make people anticipate him coming in. And what will Daniel Bryan say on Tuesday night, Mike? I guess that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, they've had different things that they've dropped and different things that different things that were written at the, for instance, the whole, there is a way, and I know it's ridiculous, but there would have been a way that they could have done this whole cool champion thing, you know, and they completely dropped that. I understand, and yeah, it was that thing is totally ridiculous, but they were kind of promoting the hell out of that thing for a couple of months, you know, the whole, oh, we're going to be co-champions. This is going to be the Kevin and Sammy show. We're going to be co-champions. Co-champions this, co-champion is that? You know, and
yeah.
and they didn't do it. They didn't pull the trigger. And like I said, I've seen a bunch of ridiculous things over the years in wrestling, you know, and this probably would have been the most ridiculous. But they've been promoting the whole hell out of it, and they, for some reason, when they promote the hell out of something, for some reason they just can't. Sometimes they just can't pull the trigger on it for some reason.
Look, I would have accepted it if they said that was our deal, and then Tuesday night they say, "Well, I'm not just the champion; you're the champion too. We're co-champions. You laid down for me, and we're going to be co-champions." Even if it was short-lived, even if that night Daniel Bryan said, "Well, this is ridiculous," or Shane McMahon said, "Well, this is not standing," or whatever, it would have worked. It would have been a much better ride to get to the same story if you hadn't tipped your hand about Sami Zayn, let him go ahead and screw that pay-per-view over at a crucial moment, and see how Shane was going to react and how AJ was going to react and how Daniel Bryan was going to react on Tuesday, than to do it this way. This is all just a setup. Here's the problem. Shooting from the hip, here's the problem. Ego is the problem. The McMahons truly feel that WrestleMania is theirs, and it is, but they truly feel it's about them. So if Triple H doesn't have a match, if Stephanie can't get her nose in there, if Shane doesn't have a match, that's more important than if Rusev has a match. That's more important than if Baron Corbin has a match. That's more important than if, you know, Dolph Ziggler has a match. Who cares about those guys? As long as Stephanie has a match, Triple H has a match, and Shane has a match. That's the problem. And nobody cares if they have a match. That's the real issue, I think, Sabretooth.
Right. And we could do a whole show on that alone, about how they're putting themselves in these matches. And I don't want to, like, get into it, but, like, another thing, like, when they do that, they're robbing someone of a spot. I mean, that could be someone else's spot that they're taking.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I mean, and they don't care. It's okay, you sit on the sidelines, you go back in catering and sit there and watch me wrestle, because I'm a McMahon. And mine will be a big storyline, and it's going to eat up plenty of TV time. And yours, if you do have a match, is going to get nothing. It's very difficult to justify that. I'm sorry. It really is. It's very difficult to justify that. Anyway, let's rate this pay-per-view. This is going to be an interesting one because, again, I don't think there's any anticipation factor in this pay-per-view. The matches themselves were all good. I can't critique a single one. There's not one match last night that I can honestly say was terrible. The main event was a little disappointing, but it wasn't terrible. But the anticipation factor wasn't there, not just because it was predictable, but because the outcomes weren't something we necessarily wanted to see or were given a vested interest in why we wanted to see one or the other win. So for that reason, if I was judging this 100% on entertainment value of the matches, it would probably be a B+. Maybe even an A-. But because, again, we were robbed of it, why do we want to see Rusev lose? You know, why do we want to see Nakamura lose? Or why do we want to see Nakamura win so bad or Rusev win so bad? We didn't have that. Why do we think it's that Ruby Riott may win? Why do we want her to get her ass kicked? We didn't have that. Why do we want Charlotte and Natty to get their asses kicked? We didn't have that. Why do we want Orton to be the, you know, Grand Slam winner? What vested interest do we have in watching Bobby Roode lose? Why do we want Bobby Roode to pull it out? We didn't have that. None of these matches really had that. And that's too bad, because it's, unfortunately, it's a new style of booking. And that style of booking is a very indie style of booking, which is, it doesn't matter who you want to win. It's just all about whether the match is good. It doesn't matter. The fans can like people equally. Just put on a great match, and that's all we care about. We don't care about getting the fans to root or be vestedly, you know, invested in who's going to win. And that's a shame, because that is one of the big – parts of wrestling, professional wrestling, that's it's dying. That part's dying. And that part's vital. I'm telling you, over the course of time, it may not be vital right now, but over the course of time, if you don't have that, wrestling's going to get boring. I promise you. It cannot have the indie mentality of just put on a good match and it doesn't matter who the side's rooting for. It's got to have that big bad guy. It's got to have that monster face that you say, I'm paying my money. Here's my money to see this guy get his ass kicked. Here's my money to see my favorite guy win. If you don't have that, it's all about here's my money to see what I think is going to be a good match. And that's going to get old quick. So for that reason, I'm giving it a C. I'll give it a flat C. It's a shame because it really deserved more, Mike, but I can't do that when I really wasn't interested in the outcomes of any of these.
Right. I'll have to give it the same thing, you know, flat C. And look, I'll take it one step further. The indie, you know, you talked about the indie form of booking. Actually, let's go back to the old territory days, you know, when a guy would spend 3, 4, 5 years in the Mid-South or the world-class championship wrestling or whatever in a particular territory where they could build those guys up and the people in that territory knew who that was. That's not what
right.
we have now. Like you said, it's the indie form of booking. It's not the territory form of booking. It's the indie
right.
form of booking where you can go to an ROH show or one of those shows or NECW, like you said. Y'all like to go to the NECW, the Northeastern Championship Wrestling. Well,
yep.
those guys could show up, but they'll show up for that one night, and the fans will be happy for those guys to be there because they're going to get a good match, and they may
right.
see him again, they may not see him again. That's not – these guys in the WWE – have long-term contracts. They're going.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see them over and over
yes.
and over again. And why are you giving these guys long-term contracts if you're not going to use them that way?
You absolutely nailed it. That's exactly correct. If you go to a show and you say, "Hey, Alberto Del Rio is going to fight Rey Mysterio at an indie show," you're like, "Well, that's great. Not only do I want to see both of those guys, but they'll put on a really good match. So let me go lay down my money to watch that." Because you don't know when you're going to see that again. You hit the nail on the head. But if they're in the WWE and they're always hanging around the WWE, then you got to give me a reason to root for one of the two of them. You got to give me a reason. You know, if we're on the indies and it's Mike versus Marcus, and they say, "Hey, you know, Mike's a really good wrestler and Marcus is a really good wrestler, and hey, they'll probably put on a really good match." Then in the indies, they might come see us. But if we're always hanging around and they say, "Well, they're both good wrestlers, I guess they'll put on a good match." That's not enough. It's got to be like, "Well, I don't know. Marcus ran over Mike's dog in the parking lot. So, you know, I want Mike to kick Marcus's ass." That's the way it's got to be. Otherwise, these guys get dull and boring after a while because they're always there. Just exactly what you said, Mike. They're always there. So we have to make you emotionally invested in whether they win or lose. And that's exactly correct, Sabretooth. Mike hit the nail on the head. It's the indie booking style is not conducive to WWE.
Right. And if also, like, as far as my rating goes, it's hard for me to rate this because what I did was, like, okay, I watched it the first time live, and I knew that we'd be rating it today. So I watched it again, and I watched it, like, as if I didn't know. As if, like, I watched it as if maybe I was a first time fan watching this, or that I didn't know, or maybe I've been away from watching WWE for a while. I'm just like watching it based on the matches alone. Now,
uh-huh.
like a first time wrestling fan watching this, on like a thing for the matches, it gets an A. I mean, like, they were some damn good matches. But
yep.
but since I know these stories, I mean, since I know these characters and the storylines, that, you know what I'm saying, since I like know what it's about, it lowers that grade, you know? So I'm probably going to go with a C. And it's sad because
I know exactly what you're saying. That's it's a brilliant point, and it's exactly right on the money. If you watched this match and you didn't know shit from applesauce, You're a wrestling fan who never saw any single one of these people. You just watched indie wrestling. You don't know Randy Orton from, you know, Randy Savage. And you just said, okay, let me sit down and watch these matches. You'd say, wow, this was good. A lot of good matches on this show. I like this show. This is a great indie show. This is a great indie style show. But knowing the storylines and knowing the characters in depth, watching them hours and hours weekly, actually lowers the grade. That's right on the money, Sabretooth. It lowers the grade because we have come to expect more. We've come to expect a reason why we need to cheer for one or the other. A reason to care who wins. A reason why these people are fighting. And when they don't give us one, when they book with the indie mentality of, hey, these are good wrestlers and who knows when you'll see them again, come see them. I think we're all in agreement that if somewhere near us, John Morrison was going to fight, I don't know, let's say Rey Mysterio, we're going to be like, well, hell, if it's near us and we can get there, we're going. No, Morrison has nothing against Mysterio, or Mysterio has nothing against Morrison. Doesn't matter. They're going to put on a really good fight, and we want to see these two guys because we don't know when we're going to get a chance to see that again. But if Morrison and Rey Mysterio were in the WWE for 3 years, and we'd seen them in and out and back and forth, win and lose and win, and go through this and this feud and that feud and another feud, and then you say, well, they're going to fight each other, you better give us a reason. You better give us a reason to root for one or the other, Mike, or it doesn't really matter all that much.
It really doesn't. I mean, even I'll say it again. Even back in the ruthless aggression era, they gave you reasons why these guys. They gave you reasons why Triple H would fight. I don't know, John Cena, or John Cena would fight the Big Show, or the Big Show would fight Mark Henry or whatever, you know. They gave you reason, you know, and they just don't do that anymore. I mean, yeah, the reason is, you know, they may say, well, the reason these two guys are fighting against Shane McMahon is he's been screwing them. Well, that could be a reason if you flesh it out more. They don't, even if they give you reasons, they don't flesh them out enough to make you really care about it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And that's exactly, I think you guys have very articulately put it. The indie booking does not work for WWE. And WWE feels now that this is the new style of booking. Just put guys in a match together. Okay, look, Nakamura is going to go against AJ Styles. And we say to ourselves, well, they don't hate each other. They don't have, you know, nobody ran over AJ's dog in the parking lot. Do we really need that? Sometimes you don't. Just because of their past history. But on a regular basis, you do. You can have those rare matches where you say, sometimes we don't need to have a feud. It's just a match. AJ and Nakamura can do that. But you can't have it all the time. You just can't. Because if it's every match, then you've lost the magic of wrestling. And the magic of wrestling is telling a story and getting people emotionally invested in the character, Sabretooth.
You're right, man. And also watching it through the eyes of someone who's never watched a wrestling match before, what really hit home was like that last match. Like I said, watching it as someone who doesn't watch wrestling, when John Cena put AJ Styles through that table, and, you know, and at the end of that match, when he just all of a sudden wakes up and puts that, you know, and knocks out Kevin Owens with that forearm. I mean, as like a first-time fan, I'm thinking, like, wow, that guy got lucky. He was asleep probably a hell of a long time. He just got up and just woke up.
You're right.
By the skin
That's
of his teeth,
absolutely
you know?
Right.
You know, like, wow.
So now you see what I mean. Now you see what I mean when I say it made AJ Styles look bad, because he was laying on a table through minutes of that match while everybody else fought and did the dirty work. And then when everybody – well, what's to stop him from just going taking a seat at the announcer's table then, if that's the case, and not fighting until everybody else is damn near dead and then jumping in the ring? It made AJ Styles look more of a bad guy, Sabretooth, than Kevin Owens or Sami Zayn, who were unfairly eliminated from being the champion.
Right, and it was, yeah, and I don't know, it was, like I said, and I hate giving this the grade I got, because, like I said, on the merit of the matches themselves, it'd been like a high B or even an A, but the fact that booking and writing aren't invested in it, man, I felt bad giving it a C. Because it's like, I'm like,
I got to tell you, this is why I enjoy talking to you guys, though, because I was thinking the same thing. I'm sitting there watching this saying, I'm enjoying the hell out of this from the wrestling point of view. I'm liking these matches. But I just kept saying to myself, God, I wish I cared who won, because then I not only would be liking it, I'd be on the edge of my seat. You know, every one of these matches were like, damn, they pulled off a great match. If they only made me care about the outcome. And it just bothers me, because, you know what, it bothers me even more because the wrestlers aren't getting the respect they deserve. They're not getting the pops or the boos or the heat they deserve, because they're not being allowed to get it. So a great match is, we pulled off a great match. Congrats. It was a great match. Fans are saying it was a great match. But they're not reaping the rewards of it was, you know, fans were ready to riot. Fans were ready to come lynch me, or fans were ready to carry me off on their shoulders as a conquering hero, because you're not getting that anymore. Todd, what's your rating overall on this?
I got to go with the rest of you. I got to give it a flat C.
Yeah, it's a shame. We're all in agreement that this is a shame, because this is an A pay-per-view. This is at least a B+, if not an A pay-per-view, wrestling-wise. I had no complaints with any of the matches. All of the matches pretty much lived up to my expectation. The feature match didn't, but it wasn't terrible. So at least it was average. Every other match exceeded my expectations. Every other one did. Really did. But I didn't care who won. Because A, I either knew and didn't care to see the outcome, like Nakamura and Rusev. I'm digging the Rusev character. It doesn't do me any good to watch him get beat. Or I really don't care, like Randy Orton and Ren Rude. They put on a great match, but I don't care who won. Okay, Orton wins, fine. Rude wins, fine. I don't care. I know Jinder Mahal is going to come down and do something to one of them. It's going to be a three-way anyway. So I don't care. You got to make us care, folks. WWE, if anybody's listening, you have to make us care. It's not enough to put two guys in a ring who are great athletes and say, show them what you got, boy, because they all got it. We know they got it. They wouldn't be in the WWE if they didn't have it. Now give us a reason to care. Give us a reason to say, I can't wait to see that son of a bitch get his ass beat, or I can't wait to see this guy finally reach the top, or I can't wait to see, you know, this happen to this person. Give us a reason. Because without the reason, all it is good athletes doing their job, and that's not exactly what wrestling is supposed to be. Anyway, folks, we'll be here tomorrow with the Monday Night Raw report. There should be plenty to talk about. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.